Let me start this off by letting you guys know that it's been a while since I recorded this. I want to say maybe like 2 weeks. So sorry that it didn't come up with another one last week, but life beckons. I have with me today my youngest brother, Lenny, and we were thinking about starting off this podcast with the sorry state of New York sports. I don't know if it was you or Randy that my other brother who posted that it's been a full decade since New York won a championship.
Let me put you on the spot here. Do you know who's the last team to win a championship in New York?
Last team to win a championship in New York. I want to say it's obviously no team that I root for, but I want to say that it was the 2009 was the Yankees. I want to say it was the Giants?
2011 New York Football Giants.
New York Giants. Well, since we are.
Which is like the. Which now, if you look at the Giants and where we are as an organization, you would never have thought that they were the last team to win a championship in New York, but they were.
Well, I wanna like start with that point. You've seen way more championships than I've seen in my lifetime. You've seen Yankees championships, you've seen Giants championships.
I seen a Ranger one. I was very
Oh
young,
yeah,
but I
you
saw a
did.
Ranger
You
one.
did. Do you think that if you were to never see another championship again, at least you could be fulfilled with that? 'Cause I feel like I always say it because I haven't seen it, that if I just want to win one and then I could just walk away from sports in general. Do you think that you could say that if you never see one again, that you'll be okay with it, or it still drives you crazy your team's not winning?
I say as a sports fan, like you have that weird like hope that your team is gonna win every single year.
Yeah.
So nah, bro. Like, what's the point of watching sports if you don't think or you don't root for your team to win? Like, don't get me wrong, I would trade, almost anything or any championship to see the Knicks win a championship.
Yeah, you are a die-hard Knicks fan.
I don't think like if one of my teams wins a championship, I'll be good for lifestyle. Because I still like look like the Giants, like you said, we brought the Giants, they won in 2011, and I'm super frustrated with them.
It's a weird dynamic because looking at your fandom from afar, I mean, just the Yankees alone. The Yankee fan
Just for
motto.
reference, I'm a Yankee, Giant, Knicks, Rangers fan. Can you
Yes,
hear me?
and I'm a and I and I chose the wrong teams. I chose the Mets, the Jets, and we do share the Knicks, which have taken a third back seat to all of them the last couple of years, but they were my first love. Now, the
Which is a
Giants.
topic, which is, and I'm sorry to cut you off, which is a topic in itself, right? Like, people that might not be from New York might not understand this, but usually teams, for whatever reason, go hand in hand. Like, if you're a Met fan, you tend to be more of a Jet fan. If you're a Yankee fan, you tend to be more of a Giant fan. I don't know why or what that is, but it just.
I mean, I guess it's I mean, I didn't fall into this. Well, not necessarily in terms of like, oh, the Jets played at Shea Stadium. So those are maybe like older fans, and maybe
Which
they
could be
made
the ones
their kids that. Who knows?
yeah, for sure. They could just tell their kids like, yo, we're Jets and Mets fans.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why you would. I hate that I'm doing that to my son. I keep telling him he's gonna read books. But going back to the Yankee point, like Yankee fans hold on to the we've won 20 some odd championships and whatnot, and that's something that comes with the territory. You guys have won the most championships of all time, but there still seems to be a level of frustration, and I don't know if it's because you guys have become, especially those that grew up in the 90s with the Yankees, like you guys are accustomed to a certain way of playing, and it hasn't necessarily been the case in the last decade. So I don't know if all that winning also kind of makes it hard to deal with years of losing.
I think, like, first of all, the fans that, like, still, like, say, yo, we won 27. I think it's usually one of two people. It's usually, like, a young, immature guy that doesn't really know what else to say, and he's going to say that. And or like, if somebody from, let's say, Boston or the Mets, who probably are the two fan bases that we argue the most, whenever they tend to, like, try to chime in, that's something we can always just throw out, just to rub it in their face, because they lack a lot of success in that area. But I think, like, I kind of like, we could be, us. You know, I started watching baseball probably, my first real season of watching baseball was probably 96, and which, you know, I just got lucky that we won the championship that year, because I remember watching the 95 series against Seattle, and then, you know, that's always going to be embedded in my brain. And I kind of love that, though, because, yeah, we might be spoiled, but, like, we are the only fan base, I think, in New York that are able to hold our team to a certain standard. And I think usually that standard is something good to have as a fan base. Like, the Knicks have no type of standard, so we kind of get excited with, you know, making it to the playoffs, even if we're going to the first round. The Giants, you know, if they make to the playoffs, again, that's, like, a great year. Or even if right now, even if they're just competitive. And I think the Yankees are the only team that, luckily for me, or I don't know about luckily, but I think that if we don't win a championship or we don't at least make it to the World Series, it's been a bad year. And I love that, bro. Like, I honestly love that as a fan, because I think, like, you know, I don't want to speak for you, but I think, you know, you as a Mets fan, like, yeah, of course you want your team to win, and you are going to want them to win a World Series, but, you know, a good season for you might not just be a World Series. It might be, you know, winning the pennant, or it might be winning the division and stuff like that, which are cool, which are great things to do, but, you know, I think, you know, just the standard is a little different.
I think that speaking on that, it's, I think that the Met fan base has become so, I guess, so discouraged over the years with the lack of success and just years of promises made and not kept, and dealing with, like, oh, we're so close. I mean, 2015 was heartbreak. And the fact that we don't make it every year, and it feels like it takes, like, a decade to get into the playoffs. It's, I think, it's coming on the 30th year of no championship. I think Mets fans right now, it's championship or bust. And I don't think that, I mean, being competitive is the starting point. You want to be competitive, but you also are tired of just going year by year of saying the same old, wait till next year, and it just gets kind of old and stale, and waiting on promise. It's kind of like with our starting pitching, where we had Harvey and DeGrom and Syndergaard and everybody, and we're like, oh, we're going to come back. But that never happened, and that in itself is where Mets fans, I think, can't do the wait till next year, because there's never been that we're building on anything. It always just feels like we get close and then we fall off a cliff. So it's really different. But I want to talk to you about, especially since your team actually did make the playoffs this year, what you think the state of...
Did we make the playoffs?
The wild card game is a heartbreaking game, because you play 162 games. This is 163. It's a... It is a playoff game, technically. But where do you think the state of your team is right now? Like, where do you see the Yankees after this season?
It's weird, right? Because as much as you hear, like, Aaron Boone doesn't really make any decisions, and he's just a media presence for the Yankees, and he's just a mouthpiece.
I mean, that's every team now. Like, every team's manager is just a puppet.
So when it comes to that, like, you know, there's a lot of Yankee fans right now that like hate the idea of bringing Boone back, but I don't know who you, unless you bring like a Buck Showalter type of manager, like I don't know who you're gonna bring in, which like the White Sox did with Tony La Russa. Like I don't know, you know, what difference a different manager. I mean, you know, it might be a different voice and stuff like that, but he replaced Joe Girardi, who was a stricter manager, and you know, made more decisions. And you know, Boone, to his credit, he's won 100 games multiple seasons. He's made it to the playoffs every year.
He deals with a lot of injuries too.
Right, he's dealt with a bunch of injuries. So I don't know if necessarily a new manager is going to make a difference. I don't know how big of a new manager in baseball, you know, changes a clubhouse. You know, there's certain examples with like Alex Cora or Kevin Cash. But besides that, like, and then I look at the, I think like our lineup 1-9 is pretty solid, but it's kind of like boom or bust the whole way down. Like DJ LeMahieu was having a bad year. Like the way that it affected this team was way more than I thought.
Well, I feel like he was the guy that got on base and was the guy that started that kind of stirred the drink for you guys. You basically get on, this guy gets on base, then you have the big power hitters. Now, you guys have a lot of, like you said, boom or bust guys. Gary Sanchez, to me, has regressed a lot. And it's not even offensively.
A lot of Yankee players, unfortunately, regressed.
What are your thoughts on him? Because it felt like the fan base turned on him a little bit.
I mean, you know, you compare him to Higgy, who's way better defensively, but he is probably, whenever he's in the lineup, he's arguably our worst batter. You know, it's kind of feast or famine with Gary. He's cost him a couple of games just off pass balls alone. But, you know, he does give you that valuable. You look at the playoff game against Boston, and the fact that Gary Cole refuses to pitch to Gary Sanchez.
That's telling.
After Stanton in that series, in that game, and there was nobody that was going to get on base. There was nobody. At least Gary Sanchez gives you a valuable out. He gives you some type of protection for Gary, for Giancarlo Stanton.
Well, do you feel like the Yankees right now are very top heavy? Because you guys have an enormous amount of money being spent, and you're not really getting a lot for the money that's being spent. You saw Gerrit Cole had a Cy Young type year until the end, where his ERA ballooned, I believe. His last five or six starts, they made it a point to say that it was like in the fives. And I know that people said he faced the Toronto Blue Jays twice, which is a hell of a team. But
he might have been pitching injured too. But you know, ever since he came back from the hamstring injury, if you look at it, that's also the last five games everybody talked about.
And, yeah.
You know, I don't want to make excuses for him because he pitched horribly in that last game. But I think he was probably injured. But I think we need to sign Rizzo back. I think he's a great player to have in your life.
Yeah, a lefty at Yankee Stadium is awesome. Yeah.
I think we need players that can manufacture runs. Like, you look at, like, I'm watching the you know, we're taping on Tuesday night. I'm watching the Giants-Dodgers game four. Mm. And you look at the Dodgers lineup, and they have players that get on base, they steal bases, they manufacture runs, they hit singles. I know that's kind of like the quote-unquote old school way of playing baseball, but I think that the Yankees need more players like that. I'd love for the Yankees to go after Corey Seager. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I'd love that.
I mean, I could see this year, more than anything, is going to be the year of the free agent shortstop. So there's a lot of free agent shortstops. I know that you guys tried to put Gleyber Torres out there, and he did not have anything positive at that position.
There's a couple players too. In fairness to the players, there's a couple of players that the Yankees have absolutely ruined, and I'm scared that Gleyber might be falling under that.
There's a lot of pressure playing here, though. There comes a certain expectation of you put up the numbers. You're like he was a touted rookie when he came up, and everybody was the Yankees didn't want to trade him for just anybody. So this dude has a lot of expectations on his shoulders. So there is a lot. I just feel like that type of baseball that you were talking about with San Francisco, I feel like those teams that do play that way are the ones that win. We have Tampa that plays that way. We have San Francisco, the Kansas City Royals that beat my team that I saw firsthand. It's almost like death by a thousand paper cuts. They might not hit the 3-run home
run.
I
put the Dodgers in there too. The Dodgers don't have too much. I mean, you know, Bellinger hit some dingers and stuff like that, but the Dodgers are 1-9. They're pretty, you know.
The Dodgers are an awesome offensive team. So they have, yeah. They have the. I mean, Bellinger's having a horrific season by his standards, but yeah, you have Mookie at the top of that lineup. It's Yeah.
Seager. No, they're a good team, but I mean, I was just going like they're another one of those teams that you know
gets on base. Yeah.
Three-run home runs. Right.
I honestly think that that's what's been killing my Mets. I think that the Mets have been constructed by Sandy Alderson in the dumbest way possible, and I cannot say how much I dislike the way that he has assembled this team. I don't care for sluggers that bat 240, 250, hit like 25 to 30 home runs, but everybody is swinging for the fences, and in key spots, you don't bring in runs. Like, the Mets were horrific with runners on base, and it's because everybody's sitting around trying to hit a home run and not trying to get the guy over, not doing the little things that's winning baseball. The Mets had no one over 300. Nemo sniffed 300, but that's a 300 that, I mean, he gets on base, but he was hurt for most of the season. I just, it's not winning baseball. It doesn't produce winning seasons. It doesn't do anything but just pat your stats and get you paid for the most part, but it's not winning.
Could I ask you two questions, actually?
Yeah.
The first question is, as a Mets fan, do you want to re-sign Javi Baez?
That question is a tough one because I do like... I like his attitude. I like the way that he plays the game. He doesn't take shit from anybody, and he is a type of player that is hard nosed. He runs the bases amazingly well. He plays great defense. What I hate about his game is the punch outs. I can't stand. I mean, you even showed me which I saw, but you sent that to me and. And Randy, that image of him striking out with the pitch that didn't even get there and like it bounced. He did improve on those numbers as a Met. He did show a little bit of plate discipline by the end. All that being said, it's a tough question because it depends on what Steve Cohen wants to do. If Steve Cohen is willing to break the bank this year and go for the jugular, and you're telling me that we're going to sign him and we're going to fill up a bunch of holes, then I'm all for it. If you're telling me that he's just going to spend enough on just Baez and then we're going to get a bunch of mediocre players, like I don't want JD Davis anywhere near third base. I'm sorry. I'm done with that experiment. I can't stand playing players like Dominic Smith in the outfield when they shouldn't be. If you're going to tell me that I have to choose between Baez and a bunch of players playing out of position in mediocrity, forget it. I'd rather you sign a Chris Bryant to play third base, and then you could shift over Jeff McNeil at second and do what you have to do. But it really depends on Cohen's attitude going into this offseason. It just – because Jeff McNeil can play second, obviously not at a Baez level, but he could play it. The problem with McNeil is that if he has another season like this, he brings absolutely nothing to the table. He was a head case this year, so I don't know what happened to him.
You know, what's like if I was to tell you, if we can go back in time, and I told you at the beginning of last year that Steve Cohen was going to get you Francisco Lindor and Javier Baez.
Oh, I would have thought playoffs. I would have thought playoffs in a heartbeat.
You would have signed up for that any day of the week.
Oh, absolutely.
So now you're saying if Javier Baez gets signed and it's just him that you're not willing to.
Well, we don't have, it's been blatantly obvious for the last couple of years, our core is not good enough. Our core is not good enough to win the division. Even in a weak year, it's not good enough to win a division to carry us. There's a lot of holes, and it's too much to continue on with this core. They have to be broken up, unfortunately. And I love, like, a dude like Conforto, I love him. I love that he came up with us. Like, you always root for that guy that came up through your system.
Yes.
But he has way too many holes. He's way too streaky. And you know, as a Mets fan, he's going to go off to another team and kill us every time he's here. Right. And it's going to happen, and we're just going to have to deal with it. But you can't come back with the same team that gave you this garbage and say, we're going to win the championship. Because... How could you tell anybody that? How could you?
That's how I feel about the Yankees. I think that's like I like the Rizzo trade. Joey Gallo is arguably the worst hitter in all of baseball.
Joey Gallo was killing it in Texas though.
Yeah, but not back to your point you made before. Yeah. Not everybody is built.
Not for New York,
especially not only in New York, but especially for the Yankees. Not even because I'm a Yankee fan, mm-hmm. but there's a difference of playing for the Mets, and there's a difference between the pressure it is for playing for the Yankees.
I mean, I'll give you that. I do think that the Yankees do have a pressure, but I do think the pressure of playing in a big city.
In New York, and so,
yeah. I mean, look at Lindor. Lindor right. melted in front of everyone's eyes, and the thing that scares me about Lindor is I do believe that he's going to rebound next year. And the numbers in September, I mean, he can't play much worse. But I do get scared with the constant talking about the fans. He got in his head about the fans, about like, I want to play good, the fans... it's not good to get booed, and he kept talking about the booing, and that just stuck with me because that was a point of reference every single time he talked about the fans. And I get it. In Cleveland, he may not have gotten booed and whatnot, but this is not Cleveland. And you also signed up. Nobody told you to sign $300 million here. You forced your way out of Cleveland. You wanted big money. You wanted to make that money. Cleveland was not going to give you that. So at the end of the day, you have to also deal with the fact that you wanted a big contract and the only team that was going to give it to you was a big market team. So you have to look yourself in the mirror. That's where sometimes I feel like players have to be true to themselves. Like, how much is too much over your happiness? Like, I'm not telling anybody I wouldn't take $300 million. But at the same time, too, if I know that I love a particular situation, that I am comfortable not in the spotlight, not being in the, not constantly questioned, not having this like enormous pressure, then maybe taking a smaller contract and playing where you're comfortable is probably the better alternative. I mean, let's say Cleveland would have came to him and gave him, I don't know, 150 or whatever. Yes, that's 150 million less. But is he ever going to spend all of that anyway?
So, it's interesting what you're saying, right? Because, I agree with what you're saying. Like, there's certain players that know they probably should stay in a smaller market because mm-hmm. that's just what their personality, suits better.
Yeah, this guy was known as Mr. Smiles. Like, he didn't smile at all last year.
But, to be honest, I think, and maybe this is like the soccer fan in me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you as a player, when you're doing bad or you're in a bad stretch, the last thing I think you need is the hometown fans booing you. So that's just putting more pressure on. I'm not saying that the fans don't have a right to boo, but I can totally understand the athlete that says, I'd rather have people cheering me on and telling me, you'll get them next time than having my home fans boo me and looking forward to away games because there's probably less pressure.
Now, how do you feel about the booing? How do you feel about the booing?
Right. I think us as fans, actually, if I'm honest, I think we have, you know, the right, again, taboo, and, you know, if we don't see you playing, especially up to, like, a $300 million contract, like, you know, we're going to voice our opinion. But I think we also, too, have, like, an obligation to our team to root for them when they need, not only when they're doing well, but when they need to be rooted for. And I think we kind of miss that boat sometimes. Like, I think we boo way too quickly.
Oh, absolutely. Like, in New York, especially if, and it seems like it's the free agent, that the big ticket free agent, right, when they're not performing, that the fans get on.
Yeah.
But I think that's an interesting situation to bring up, because I don't think the fans get that. I think that the fans see this guy's getting paid $30 million while I get paid whatever I get paid. I got to pay $50 just to get into the stadium. Then I have to pay $15 for a hot dog. And it's always the whole, like, you're getting paid to play a game, blah, blah, blah. So it's almost psychological, because I think that maybe it's resentment that people have, or jealousy that plays a little bit into it. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, like, you know, as a sport fan and as a knowledgeable sport fan, you know, if I do say so myself, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, you understand sports, but that doesn't only mean the actual sport itself. That means the financial aspect of sports. Like, I know there's going to be players that sign $300 million. They do things that I can't do. I wish I could do it. I wish I could throw 100 miles per hour or hit 50 home runs. But I can't do it. So I might, you know, let's say Giancarlo Stanton, who had a great year this year, right? You know, maybe that adds to some extra booing, the fact that we signed you and we have higher expectations. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I don't think I've ever put, like, wow, this guy makes $300 million and he can't hit a baseball and I have to go to work. I don't think I've ever thought of that personally. Now, there's added expectations to when you sign a big contract that you're going to be a certain type of player. And if you don't come in and, you know, become that player or show that you're that player, sure, you're going to probably get booed maybe louder or maybe, you know, earlier than the player that we just called up, you know. But I don't know if it's because, you know, we're resentful or we wish we were making that money. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I think that there are fans that think that way, and I think that there's also, not for nothing, there is a hint, and I'm not saying that this is for everybody, but I do sometimes think that there is a hint of almost racism when it comes to the ethnic player here too. And I think there's some undertones of that, but I don't want to really get into it because I don't have a major, I don't have proof of that. So I don't want to sit there and be like, oh, I know there's racism. But I mean, I'm not dumb. I'm a Jets fan. I know how fans reacted to Geno Smith, and it happens. Like, you know that it's there, but it's just, that's society. So there's nothing we could do to fix that.
This is my last trivia question of the night.
Oh, trivia question. Okay.
The first one was who was the last team to win a championship?
Oh, yes.
This is going to be, who was the quarterback to play for the Giants the game that broke Eli Manning's?
That was Geno Smith. And I remember, thinking how stupid that decision was.
How fitting was that?
But that was almost an indication of where the Giants were going and continue to be. Now, I guess we could shift to the sad story, the sad story of what New York football has become, because, Jesus, it's been horrible. Like, there has been, it's sad because as a Met fan, I knew my team's soul got ripped out of its body basically after those crushing losses against the Giants and Dodgers in August. We were, I mean, mathematically, we were still alive in September, but there was no fight in that team after that. So I was like, let's see, what is there to look forward to? I know that the Knicks are not that far away, but the next sport was football. And as a Jets fan, I can honestly say I was looking forward to, and still am for the most part, the development of Zach Wilson and see what he has. But tough. This team is so hard to watch at times.
The thing that's, and you know, you probably know this better than me, or you probably have a better idea of this than I do. The thing that scares me about the Jets and Zach Wilson is, I like what's his name, Robert Saleh as the coach. I like him as a coach. I don't know if I trust him with my first round future franchise quarterback.
I understand where you're coming from with that. And I agree with you.
That worries me.
I'm very nervous. The Jets have not developed a quarterback in God knows how long. I don't think that the Jets have ever been in the business of developing QBs. I think that they've tried. They've failed. The last QB that I had any confidence in that they drafted was Chad Pennington. I have not seen Mark Sanchez lucked up into a good situation. And I honestly think that Rex Ryan, if he would have kept his fat mouth shut, would have let Brett Favre lead us into the promised land. But because he was so convinced that his defense could win regardless of who was leading them, it cost us a championship. Because I think that Brett Favre was on the fence. And Rex making these comments pretty much gifted him to the Minnesota Vikings. And we saw what he did. Brett Favre, when he wasn't hurt with the Jets, had us at 8-4. We looked like an absolute juggernaut. And he got hurt, and then his pride wouldn't let him sit down. And he played with a rotator cuff injury. And we lost a bunch of games. We missed the playoffs. But the following year...
At least he scored off the field that season.
Well, or he tried at least. I mean, Jesus and his Wrangler jeans. I don't know. I don't know what we're gonna do. If you're asking me, we have a defensive minded head coach leading a rookie quarterback, a first time coach at that. Like there's so many red flags. Like you're already like, are we gonna damage this kid? We didn't. We tried. I do want to give the front office a little bit of credit in that we've done already more for him than we did for Sam Darnold.
So we
have tried to get him some protection. We've got him a little bit of weapons, but next year we have to hit. We have to get a tight end. We have to get. We have to continue building that offensive line because that. That right side of the offensive line is atrocious. So we do have to continue that center position. There's a lot of things we still need to build around him. We probably might have to get another wide receiver because I haven't seen enough separation from any of these dudes. I don't know. I don't know how long it's going to take, but I'm just praying that what we get from this kid is signs and not even signs because I don't even want signs. Just proof that he could lead us to where we need to go.
You know, all the analysts and all the professional people that get paid to speak about quarterback development and you know, quarterback of ability, they all speak pretty highly of him. I mean, you know, I've only watched a couple of Jets games this year, and unfortunately one of them was the Broncos game, another one I think was the game against the Falcons. The game against the Falcons didn't look bad, but he looked horrible against the Broncos.
He gets off to too many slow starts. The offense seems to go three and out all the first and second quarter. Then he starts showing flashes in the third and fourth, but by then we're either gassed, our defense is either gassed or just like this weekend, we did nothing the first half against the Falcons. Our defense pretty much has kept us in every game because our defense right now is ranked, I believe, 10th in the league. So it's kept us in games, but they're on the field for way too long. And by the end of it, that Falcons game, we got it to within 20-17. But the defense was on the field for, like, I want to say 40 minutes. And they had nothing at the end. So it's a problem. You gotta be able to score You know, in the first quarter, we haven't scored. We have not scored a touchdown all year in the first quarter.
Yeah, and when you have to, you know, when you have to throw, and you're forced to throw, it's a big difference. And when defenses are ready and looking for the throw, you know, it's just different. It's harder on a rookie quarterback, especially in those moments when you have to make the throw, compared to when you're ready, when your offense is flowing and you can mix in some play action and your running game is working. You know, it's a big difference, and that's why there's only certain amount of rookies that actually come out the gate, you know, firing, because usually a good quarterback goes to a bad team. Look at Trevor Lawrence, who's already lost more games this year than he had in all his high school and college career.
Mm-hmm.
When you get drafted high as a quarterback, most times it means your team is not ready to win.
Yeah.
And when you're forced to throw, and a team drafting that high usually has, you know, certain aspects, right? They usually have a weak offensive line.
Mm.
They usually have, you know, not a good amount of depth at wide receiver, or a running back that's not great. And those are all things that make quarterbacks better.
No, absolutely. You have to have the Jets don't have a tight end. There's not a tight end that you could find on that squad. And I don't know how you don't get a tight end on a team, especially with a rookie quarterback. It just doesn't make any sense to me. There were so many. The Patriots signed too. How did you not? I don't know. I just didn't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Jets did good, though, in signing Corey Davis. And they drafted Elijah Moore.
Yeah, he hasn't even shown up. He has not shown up. But I don't even, the Jets, like I said, they're playing basically for nothing right now, and we'll probably be picking in the top four again. Now I want to shift gears, because I know you're a big Giants fan. You guys just played the Cowboys. It seems like your whole team got murdered in that team that game. What happened?
That was tough. I think, we already came in banged up. We didn't have Darius Slayton. Sterling Shepard wasn't playing. Andrew Thomas was out. So we were already a little bit behind the eight ball. And then when you see Saquon go down in one of the first plays of the game.
Can you depend on him anymore? Do you think that Saquon Barkley is somebody you could depend on after last year and already getting hurt this year?
I think drafting him obviously was the wrong decision. I think he's a great talent.
Mm.
I think he's a great guy. I think he's the type of player you wish to, like, you know, build around and have on your team. He says all the right things. You know, he puts in the work. I think he unfortunately just has, like, that injury bug where, you look at the play against Dallas.
Yeah.
That wasn't his fault. I mean, it's a freak play. You know, he stepped on the dude's ankle running a route.
Yeah.
You can't really kill him for that. But unfortunately, you know, he has been on the field. And, you know,
well, where do you subscribe? How do you feel about drafting a running back so high? Do you think that it was?
No, I think it's the wrong decision. He's a generational talent, mm-hmm. I think he's the type of player that if you are going to draft a running back, it's a type of player like him.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't work out.
But, I mean, most GMs have a lower value on running backs. They feel like you could basically manufacture running backs. I mean, if you look at the top run, you have Christian McCaffrey's another one that seems to always get hurt. So it's just, that's a position that you're kind of expected to take a lot of hits.
Well, yeah, that goes back to also to like it kind of ties into the quarterback conversation we're having.
Mm.
If you draft a running back that high, usually you draft a running back that high because you're going to work him to the bone.
Mm.
Christian McCaffrey is head and shoulders the best player on Carolina. He gets the ball more than any other player.
Mm.
He touches the ball. So, unfortunately, just, you know, off pure probability, you're going to probably get hurt more often than said player who doesn't get the ball as much.
Yeah.
Because you're getting tackled more. You're in more plays. You know, more things are wound up to happen to you. Mm-hmm. Just like Saquon, who, you know, he gets the ball a lot, and he's in a lot of plays, and since he's so versatile, they, you know, they sometimes they spread him out wide as a wide receiver. They put him in the slot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, he's just going to get hurt more often than not than more than other players because he's always in the action.
All right, now I have a question for you now, and I really want you to tell me the truth on this. Do you think your quarterback can lead you to the promised land?
I think Daniel Jones is having his best year so far as a Giant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just won the Offensive Player of the Week 2 weeks ago. Last week he got the concussion, which looked horrible. But I think I don't know. And I think that that's okay. And I think, you give him a shot. Like, there's a bunch of quarterbacks. Look at Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
He took Carolina to the Super Bowl, and look where he is now. Look at Matt Ryan. Is Matt Ryan the type of quarterback that can win you a Super Bowl?
Well, he was what? Matt Ryan was half away from it, no? Or a quarter away?
Right. And I just think, like, look at Colin Kaepernick. Just random players who've been to Super Bowls that aren't necessarily thought of as great quarterbacks or the best of quarterbacks, and they took them to the Super. They took them to the Super Bowl. Look at Joe Flacco. Look, I think there's so many quarterbacks that are not great that have been to the Super Bowl and have even won the Super Bowl. That I think sure, he could take them to the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Do I think he's gonna win like multiple Super Bowls? Probably not.
So you don't think he's the problem, though?
I don't think he's a problem, no.
So then what do you think is holding you guys back? Because there's something on the field. It doesn't seem like...
The biggest thing that holds the Giants back, and it's been this way for the last I don't know how many years, and with a guy like Gettleman, you thought he would come in and fix it, is the offensive line. And to be fair, the defensive line. We have nobody who rushes the passer. On the offensive line, we have maybe two or three of the five positions solidified. I think Nate Solder is probably the worst contract we've ever given out. And we can't run the ball. You know, they're good when it comes to pass blocking this year anyway. But we can't run the ball, even with a running back like Saquon Barkley, because we don't make any holes. And defensively, the defensive line, I can't remember the last good defensive end that we've had. I can't remember the last guy who put up double-digit numbers in sacks. I don't understand why. We have a good defense. We have a good secondary. I don't understand why we don't invest in our offensive and defensive line, especially, you know, us as Giant fans. The times we've ever had success, it's always been because of our offensive and defensive line.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in football especially, you build through the lines. That's how you win. So, I mean, but most of the time I'm thinking you're drafting that. And the Giants haven't drafted anybody that I could think of that really makes a difference on those lines.
We drafted Andrew Thomas, who's our left tackle, who was hurt last week. And he's been actually playing really well.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, we've had bad drafts.
I think that's a kill, especially in football. I mean, basketball too, which we'll talk in a sec, but football, it seems like if you have a terrible first round, it pretty much kills your whole team, because it's hard to rebound from missed first rounders, especially.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in terms, let's move on from this misery to what seems to be the one light at the end of the tunnel for New York sports. I mean, I don't think anybody is forecasting a championship for this team, but the New York Knicks seem to be. And I mean, Brooklyn. I don't even think about Brooklyn, but the New York Knicks seem to finally be on the right path. they brought home Kemba. They got some shooters on there. The rookies looked amazing in the summer league. So there's a lot of things to look forward to, especially building off last year. How do you feel about the 2021-22 New York Knicks?
I'm excited. I mean, you know, we're not going to win a championship, but anytime you can look forward to a season as a Knicks fan, I think you already won. I think, like,
especially after the last two decades.
Right. I think, you know, I'm interested. There's a lot of exciting storylines. You know, Kemba Walker coming back. Seeing how he's going to fit in the offense, seeing how him and Julius Randle play together, seeing if Derrick Rose can build off of last season's success, seeing the evolution of our rookies, of Emmanuel Quickley, if he could do it again, if Obi Toppin can hopefully progress.
What are your thoughts on him? I had higher expectations because I really did feel like he was like an Amari Stoudemire light. But he really didn't have that great of a rookie season. Like, I'm hoping he doesn't become Knox, because Knox has been really disappointing. And I really thought that Knox was starting to come around, especially when he started knocking down some threes. But it felt like he would hit like a couple threes and then disappear, and then he would be nowhere to be seen. And then he would come back and then miss, and he was out of rotation, in rotation. I don't know what we have with Knox, really. He doesn't really play good enough defense to warrant time to be on there, and he doesn't have that consistent a shot. You hope that he's consistent this year, but I don't know what we have with him.
I don't know if Knox is going to be in the rotation much. With Obi Toppin, I think it's... last year was definitely disappointing. I think... I hope, anyway. He has that work ethic I feel like he's the type of player he wants to get better, and he's going to do everything possible to get better. You know, his athleticism is out. You know, he can jump out of the gym.
Yes.
He could do it all athletically. You know, you just hope that he translates that into more basketball plays. I think he maybe fell in love a little bit too much with the three-pointer. I think I'd rather him play, you know, from the three-point line down.
Do you think that had something to do with the fact that Alfred Payton was his point guard and he wasn't getting those alleys and those looks at the basket?
Sure. I mean, a better point guard makes your whole team better, right? So I'm sure he could have, you know, benefited from a better point guard. And I think he'll benefit from playing with Kemba Walker. He'll probably have more open shots. He'll probably, you know, have more action in the pick and roll or whatnot and things of that nature. So I'm sure it's going to help. I think you know, anytime you go into the season thinking if the Knicks don't make the playoffs, it's a disappointment. It's almost, I can't even really remember thinking that last year.
It was an anomaly. Nobody was expecting them to do it. Now, there's a lot of things that the Knicks are going to have to, like, really, fingers crossed, hope that they don't have happen. They have to make, one, you don't want to see Julius Randle regress. You also, injuries could really derail this team. And you're banking on Kemba Walker, who's coming off an injury-riddled season, to not. Also, I really did like this guy. I am a big fan of Robinson, but I do think that he has to be on the damn court. It just, I think he could have made such a difference in that Atlanta series, and he was obviously broken hand. So I need to see him play. I do think that if the Knicks could stay healthy, which, I mean, you could say that about any team, but I think if the Knicks can stay healthy and compete like they did last year, I could see them ending, I want to say, in the top four in the East. What do you think?
I hope, you know, you look at the East, and there's a certain amount of teams that just jump out, and you know they're gonna have a better record than the Knicks.
So who do you think are your powerhouses in the East this year?
So though, well, you have to respect Milwaukee off that they just won the championship.
Yes.
You gotta think Boston is. I mean, Brooklyn is gonna be better.
Well, even with the situation with Kyrie and.
I think with or without Kyrie, I think Kevin Durant and James Harden on the same team, you're probably looking at the number two seed at least. Mm.
So okay, so Brooklyn, you got Brooklyn up there. You got Milwaukee, the championship team.
Atlanta's probably going to be another good team.
Now, if we play, because it feels like the Knicks rebuilt the squad almost with Atlanta in their heads. Yeah. Do you think the Knicks have enough right now to get out of the first round, say, if they faced Atlanta again?
I think it depends a lot on Julius Randle again. I mean, last year in the playoffs was a little disheartening, and it was a little bit of, you know, like, I've never been a big Julius Randle guy, to be fair. Like, last year he played a great, obviously. But I just don't know if that was, like, you know, one of those contract years, or if that's going to be the way he plays from now on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the playoffs, he probably was our worst player.
Well, I mean, do you think that, and I preface this by saying, you know, the playoffs is a different beast. So, you know that teams are going to try to, like, neutralize your best players and make sure that they get the ball out of their hands. Do you think that the Knicks just didn't have enough firepower around him that he took too much responsibility into his own hands?
Whenever you're gonna try to get into the mindset of a player, it's a little tricky. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he had that mentality. I think, you know, the whole season the Knicks kind of played as a team, and I think Derrick Rose probably outplayed. I think anybody thought he was gonna be in the playoffs.
Yes, absolutely.
He's in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think if Julius Randle has a regular, like if Julius Randle plays the way he played in the regular season. In that series, I think we win way more than one game. I think we might even win the series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. I think they played him a certain way, and he couldn't get out of it, and he started overthinking possibly, and he was missing more shots than he did.
Yeah.
Probably. So I don't know. It could be that.
All right. So then, right now, to just get a prediction out of you. The East is revamped. You saw the Bulls did their thing. We obviously see Atlanta. Philly's Miami, still strong.
Miami got much better.
Oh, Miami got super better now. So there are teams that have revamped and are challenging. Are the Knicks a playoff team in your eyes this year?
Knicks are without a doubt a playoff team. I just don't know if they get home court.
Okay, so the Knicks are in the playoffs. Do the Knicks, in your heart, knowing the teams that are in the top of the Eastern Conference, do the Knicks win and finally get out of the first round this year?
Put me on the spot here. I think the Knicks make it out the first round. They'll probably end up in either the 4 or 5 seed.
Mm.
And I think they can beat whoever the 4 or 5 seed is. Mm. And I think they probably make it to the second round this year.
The second round. So you're predicting second round, and then probably ouster after that.
Right. I don't think they'll be. I mean, you never know if they make some type of crazy trade.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll be able to beat a Milwaukee or a Brooklyn, who they'll probably end up having to play in the second.
Man, it's sad that is like the highlight of New York sports, a second round ouster. But I mean, we'll see. In knock on wood, the Knicks could surprise people, maybe make that trade that you're talking about, but yeah, they're the highlight of New York sports right now.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't even, New York sports is so bad, I don't even think we have to talk anymore about New York sports at this point, because there's really nothing good except for like the Knicks' promise of at least competitive basketball. I want to thank you for coming on. Is there anywhere that folks that want to continue this conversation with you can find you on social media or anything?
Sure, yeah, not yet. My Twitter is E EAZY41. That's EAZY41. That's usually wherever I do most of my, you know, sports talks, and you know, me and you go at it sometimes.
We definitely do.
Yeah, that's definitely where people can find me at.
All right. Well, thank you again for coming on, and thank you, audience, for listening, and we'll see you later.
See you, man. Talk to you later.
All right.